Opening day is finally here. Welcome to episode 3 of the Dodgers Collective. My name is Doug McCain. I cover the Dodgers for Dodgers Nation. Joined by Jerry Harrison Jr., former Dodger World Series champion, and Fabian Ardaia, who covers the Dodgers for The Athletic. Gentlemen, the day's finally here. We're not talking about spring training and everything that goes into it, the roster construction. I mean, let's let it fly today. I got to start with you, Jerry, though, because look, Fabian, we never woke up on opening day to play in a big league game. Jerry, what's it like this day as a player, knowing that, hey, it's the pageantry, the emotions, everything that goes into just being on an opening day roster in the bigs?
It's certainly special. You know, I don't care if you're a rookie, if you're your first opening day like Alex Freeland, or if you're a veteran guy like a Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman, you're excited. You're excited for a chance at a new season, a chance to, if you're the Dodgers, three-peat. But there's nothing like opening day. I don't care who you play for. It's exciting. And, you know, you can catch lightning in a bottle if you're other teams and have a great season, get to the postseason, have a chance to win the World Series. So everybody's excited. You know, the fans are excited. It is must-see TV if you're watching it at home. But if you're a fan at the stadium, everybody's excited. It has a playoff-like atmosphere. So as a player, you're excited for a new season and excited to get a chance to play in front of thousands of people at the stadium.
Yeah, I always think of 2013, Kirsch, hitting the bomb against the Giants, just the pageantry, the bunting. Fabian, not a player, but an esteemed writer. You're part of the opening day lore as well. I mean, what are the feels for you heading into another opening day covering this team?
Well, part of it's the excitement that spring training's over. Because I think at the end of the day, like, spring training is too long. There's only so much stuff you could write about. But yeah, I think it's good to like get into the season, getting into the stuff that matters. It makes my job more entertaining because there's actual stakes on the line. Obviously, everyone's in a good mood all spring training, but like, things are different over the course of a regular season. I think opening day is kind of the start of it. And also, it's a reminder of why you're in this, like why you love baseball in the first place. It's just sort of that feeling of opening day, feeling of knowing that no matter what, every team's kind of in the mix, and Dodgers probably more so than most.
Yeah, and this opening day, of course, another special one for the Dodgers. You got NBC, Clayton Kershaw, Yoshinobu Yamamoto on the mound. Before we get into some of these over-unders, we're going to hit those. We got some predictions. I don't know if you fellas want to throw out a World Series prediction. We'll kind of get to that. Just the big question since our last show was Alex Freeland versus Hyesung Kim. And Hyesung Kim getting optioned to the minors, Alex Freeland making that opening day roster. Fabian, we talked about it on this show. Was he a lock? Was he in the driver's seat? A lot of people felt like he was a lock. And then you always brought up Alex Freeland as a possibility. And that's ultimately the direction that this organization went to at least start the season.
Yeah, I don't think either guy won the job, which I think is part of why it went down like this, is that Hyesung Kim didn't necessarily go out and win the job. Obviously, you look at the surface numbers, like way better for Hyesung Kim than Alex Freeland. And also just like you look at the versatility, so that there's a lot of things that sort of value Hyesung Kim over an Alex Freeland. But Freeland did all the things the Dodgers wanted him to do with his at-bat quality, with his approach. And they saw him as a guy for this sort of short-term role where it's essentially going to be 2 months of him starting against right-handed pitching. They saw Freeland as a better fit for that, and they wanted Kim to get everyday at-bats down in the minors, thinking that getting a chance to work through his swing regularly for the next couple of months will help him better long-term. Obviously, it's not the most compelling argument for fans who are frustrated that Kim's not on the opening day roster, but it's still one of those things where Freeland's still a very capable player, a guy who was a top 100 prospect. Defensively, there's no questions there. Just offensively, if he can use some of the approach shifts that he's done, or not even shifts, like just getting back to who he was before that first big league stint, that they think that there's better results to come with him than what we saw this spring.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. It's everyone's always, hey, the Dodgers don't play their top prospects enough. And here we get an example of them playing their eighth best prospect, a guy that gives you quality at bat. He sees pitches. He can has the potential to get on base to give Shohei and Tucker in the top of that lineup some run-producing opportunities. Jerry, what was your reaction to them ultimately going with Freeland over Tucker to start the year?
Well, I think that, you know, it was a little bit of a surprise, but if you really look at it in totality, and, you know, talking to Adrian Gonzalez a couple of days ago, we worked together, he brought up a good point. If you're going to hit a guy ninth, you want the flexibility of Alex Freeland who could switch hit. Now, you could elect to pinch hit, let's say, Miguel Rojas in the later innings, but you can have that option and knowing that you could defend what the other team's going to do. So case in point, you have Alex Freeland, lefty. then Shohei Ohtani, lefty. And then after Sho is Kyle Tucker. If you're a manager, you may hesitate to bring in that lefty because we know Alex Freeland has some pop from the right side. So you have that little bit of a cat and mouse game. So that could have been a reason. And also, Alex Freeland, in my opinion, is elite defensively. He's a great second baseman. He has tremendous range. He's got a really good rapport with Mookie Betts, the shortstop. And they do like his at-bat qualities. He had 11 walks in the spring where he was working in the counts. And you want that nine-hole hitter to have good at-bats and possibly get on base via a walk to make sure you extend an inning and have Shohei Ohtani come up to the plate along with Kyle Tucker after him. So I think those were kind of were in play. Ha-Seong Kim, even though statistically he did do better than Freeland in spring training, the swing and miss is still there. It's still there. Kim cannot strike out. He needs to be a guy that puts the ball in play and hopefully he can kind of work on his swing. I still think he's got a tremendous potential and hopefully he catches fire down in AAA because you never know what happens up at the big league level. So for now, Freeland's going to get the lion's share against right-handed pitching and hopefully he runs with it because he certainly has talent and ability and hopefully gets off to a good start.
Yeah, you look at the chase rate, you look at the barrel rate, you look at the walk rate, some of the stuff that kind of prefers Freeland over Kim. Fabian, how much do you think this is him getting more opportunities to implement some of those swing changes that they've talked about with the twisting and just trying to stay a little more square to the baseball? And this allows Kim to get more development now so that when he does get his opportunity, he doesn't, like Jerry said, have an extremely high strikeout rate and not give you those competitive at-bats.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think what we saw during the WBC was, yes, he came into spring in a really good spot with the swing, was doing good work with the Dodgers hitting coaches, and then goes to the WBC, thinks he's still doing the same things. He's still trying to do the same things, but clearly the swing is not in a consistent enough place. And that way, during the WBC, he sort of comes back, realizes that swing came all out of whack, and he basically needs to get reset in that way. And the fact that he needed to get reset, I think, is a sign that these aren't as sticky of changes as we've expected at this point. And obviously getting more time down in AAA will allow him to maybe get some more work done, be able to make things more consistent and get more comfortable with just doing that on an everyday basis. Cause yeah, like if you can get that swing to a point where you're making more contact, yeah, sure. Like it's more power potential and stuff like that. But really the bat to ball is what's going to matter the most for him with his skill set, with his speed, understanding that if he can get bat to ball and put together solid at bats, have that defense, that versatility is probably the best fit for the Dodgers roster, but that swing is just not in that spot right now. I think you'd sort of see that even with some of the underlying results, a lot of those hits were rolling over a ball to the right side. They was able to beat a ball out because of his speed, but those aren't things that necessarily you can repeat over the course of 162 games.
And it's a long season. They're going to slow play guys. They're going to make sure the veterans are close to 100%. So he's going to get his opportunity. It's just going to be on the comment to kind of see what he makes of that opportunity. I'll tell you what, gentlemen, the thing that I'm most excited about is when the Dodgers drop that lineup tweet and we see Kyle Tucker in a lineup that already included Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman. I thought it was really interesting to hear Freddie talk about batting fifth in the lineup. He hasn't bat lower than fourth since 2016. Dave talked about just making it hard for the opposing manager to navigate that. This, of course, throws another right-handed bat, so you have to face a couple of those righties before you face that lefty. I mean, this is going to be very difficult for the opposing manager to navigate. Can't wait to see Kyle Tucker and also Freddie Freeman batting fifth. That's pretty interesting as far as roster and lineup construction, right, Jerry?
Well, listen, you can bat Freddie Freeman anywhere, you know. So when you're hitting him fifth, that's against left-handed pitching. He'll hit fourth against right-handed pitching. I think the thing with Kyle Tucker, he's excellent at hitting the fastball. I mean, whether it's 98 to 100 miles an hour, if you throw 101, he can get the barrel out and crush fastball. So I think that's why you have him in the two hole, because if you're opposing pitcher, opposing manager, you can't afford to walk a Kyle Tucker to get to Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith. You just can't do that. So especially when Shohei Ohtani's on first base, for instance, you know, Shohei Ohtani has the ability to run. Kyle Tucker might get more fastballs because Shohei Ohtani is at first base. So we know Kyle Tucker crushes fastball. He's younger 29 years young. So I like the fact that he's up the top of the lineup, because when he's on base as well with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman hidden behind him, ball's in the gap. Guess what? Kyle Tucker's going to score because of his excellent speed. So he's got great plate discipline as well. He's been in great lineups before. And I think he's more apt to get more fastballs in that two spots. So I like the way the lineup is constructed today. Now, things could change throughout the course of the season. We know things happen. Unfortunately, injuries do happen as well. But I love Show hitting first, Tuck second, Mookie Betts and Fab Five Freddy, the first four, and obviously America's catcher hitting fifth, and so on and so forth. This lineup is so deep. It's special. It reminds me of those late 90s Mariners lineup when they ran out A-Rod, Ken Griffey Jr., Edgar Martinez. I'm going to say Paul Sorrento. How about that name? A blast from the past. So Jay Buhner as well. So I love the makeup of this roster. And we got a guy like Andy Páez will sometimes hit eighth in this lineup, which is special.
Yeah, the depth is pretty incredible when you look at it. And last season, Dave talked about the Teoscar tax, where you threw Teo above there when Freddie Freeman, he bat cleanup 61 times last season. What do you look at the top of this lineup? What is your kind of takeaway early on this season, Fabian?
Yeah, I think it's sort of what Jerry touched upon, where you're going to have Shohei and Kyle Tucker, two guys who get on base a ton. And you probably have your three best bats of all guys behind him, which is probably what you ideally would want when you have traffic on the bases. Mookie Betts, obviously, the power went down a little bit last year, but the bats of all didn't. So having that still be there, Freddie Freeman, we know the bats of all and his ability with runners on base. Will Smith, same thing. I think it creates, obviously, all kinds of challenges. You can't really pitch around those sort of guys. Even a guy like a Kyle Tucker has been really good against left-handed pitching. So even if you want to stack a lefty there at a certain point in the game, that makes things difficult, especially if you're going to have start a lefty, you have Freddie Freeman hitting fifth, then all of a sudden that lefty is going to have to face Will Smith and then possibly have to face Teoscar Hernandez afterwards if the three-batter minimum hasn't come into effect yet. There's just so many hurdles for an opposing pitching staff that in theory, you'd think that this would be a Dodgers lineup that continues to put up runs just like he did for most of last year, although second half of last year, we saw some of the swoons that they had. I think those are more preventable this time around, just because the Dodgers have another guy like a Kyle Tucker, who's sort of like a Max Muncy, will see a lot of pitches, kind of drain the opposing pitching staffs, make it more difficult just to even get through one turn through the lineup, even if you keep them at zero runs for that turn through.
Yeah, just having two dynamic left-handed bats is going to change things. And just the thought of Max Muncy and Teo batting seventh in that part of the lineup just really talks about just the all-time depth that this lineup has the potential of having. And then you look at the X factors in this lineup. Andy Páez kind of slumped a little bit after the break, slumped in the postseason, but he's someone that could have a four war season, hit 30 plus home runs, make a run at an all-star team. We'll see what Tommy Edman looks like when he comes back. We talk about the two younger with Kim and Freeland. Jerry, who is your X factor for this Dodgers lineup heading into the season?
Well, I think you kind of touched on it. Andy Páez, I think he's somehow getting overlooked. You got to remember, that first half last year, he was an all-star. I was surprised that he did not make the all-star team. And, you know, I was disappointed. I'm sure he was as well, because he certainly was all-star worthy. I think he's going to have an even better season. You mentioned he's going to hit seventh, eighth in this lineup. He's going to still have plenty of RBI opportunities. And we know the calling card him throughout the minor leagues and really the start of the big league season, he can hit. Now, he did slump a little bit, especially in September and in the postseason. For me, I remember having my first full season in the big leagues. It was taxing, man. It was a long season. It felt like you played an extra 4 months, because the minor league season, you play about 140, 44 games. Big league season, you play 162 plus the playoffs. That is a long grind. I think he's going to be more apt to have a better performance because he has more understanding of what is expected of him and what to expect for the season. So I think Andy Páez will be that X factor. And listen, a lot of things that people aren't really talking about is how he excelled defensively in center field, especially the second half of the season. We got great, great coaches as well. They do a great job of preparing our guys. But we have also guys that have tremendous work ethic. Andy Páez works extremely hard on his defense, and that's why he became elite defender in the second half and in the World Series in the postseason. Remember, Dave Roberts inserted him in that game. Remember that catch he made? He ran over Kiki Hernandez. Well, he was just inserted as a defensive replacement in center field, and he made an incredible catch to save the World Series. So I think he's becoming an elite defender in center field with that rocket arm, accurate as well, and I think he's going to be excellent at the plate as well. So he's my X factor for the season.
Oh, yeah, Jay, we certainly remember that catch. We'll always remember that catch, right? The best catch in World Series history, at least in the conversation. Fabian, give me the X factor for the Dodgers offense.
Yeah, I think Paez is the guy to point to. It's sort of like Jerry sort of pointed out. And he basically told me like that, yeah, he basically got tired by the end of the last season. He got developed some bad habits as a result. So just to get a different answer from Jerry, I'm going to go one of or both of Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. I think it's going to come down to those two guys. Because, like I mentioned before, Shohei Ohtani and Kyle Tucker are going to get on base. Those two guys are going to have a chance to really drive in a lot of runs. And if both guys have the kind of bounce back seasons that we're expecting out of those guys, and I don't even know if you can say that for Freddie Freeman because he still had a really strong season last year. But if both those guys can sort of stave off Father Time for another year and have that kind of offensive production we know they can, then all of a sudden this Dodgers lineup goes from steady, consistent to dangerous and really possibly the best in baseball.
Yeah, I think that's such an incredible point. When you think of the standard those guys have set, it's all-star MVP caliber bats. But the question is, when will the inevitable decline take place? Has that already happened with Mookie Betts? Has that already sort of happened with Freddie Freeman, who's still putting up all-star bat numbers, but his standard is so high? I'm going to go with Max Muncy. I mean, you look at Max Muncy last season in games where the Dodgers struggled. It felt like they got into a funk. It just, he screams glue guy to an offense, the way he can see pitches, the way that he provides power. And he's a guy, I mean, you give him 162 games, give you 30 home runs and 100 RBI. And his big question is health. Fabian, it's always a health concern. He's one of those guys, enters camp, I'm in the best shape, I've done some stuff in the offseason. What's your outlook on Max Muncy heading into 26?
Yeah, I think they know what he is and they know how valuable he is. That's why they gave him a contract extension before the spring training even started, just because they know how consistent, how much of a constant he is in that lineup. I think, yeah, the health is a serious question. I think that's one of those things where the Dodgers are banking in health for him and a lot of the veterans on the team. They understand that guys have missed time. Max Muncy has missed more than a month, I think, each of the last couple seasons. Some with the oblique stuff that's been sort of consistent over the last couple of years, and also the freak knee injury he had last July. So, yeah, that's something you have to kind of have to bake in. But I think the Dodgers have enough depth, especially on the infield, with a guy like Santiago Espinal, Haesung Kim, Alex Freeland, and also obviously Kiki Hernandez, once he's back, are going to sort of help them sort of fill third base if they need have some time off for Max Muncy. Miguel Rojas as well, also in that mix.
I think that is really what it's going to come down to as far as does this team enter those conversations, as you mentioned, Jerry, for best lineups of all time. Is do these all-time great future Hall of Fame players the Dodgers have, do they put up vintage seasons for themselves, and then do some of these young players emerge, the contributions for Kyle Tucker, how does Shohei hit and pitch and all those things. By the way, I will mention, you mentioned Alex Rodriguez. When I was going to the WBC, my plane ride there, I saw Alex Rodriguez in first class. And I was like, hey, Rod, what's up, my man? You know, you're waiting. And I was like, bro, why are you in first class? Why don't you have a private jet? You know, he said to me, he's like, why are you in coach? I was like, bro, come on, man. So yeah, it was good times. But
people understand, listen, I mean, even though you're worth tons of money, these guys, they're wealthy for a reason. Why waste money? Especially when I'm sure he's going to WBC. It's on somebody else's dime. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a lot of guys that are worth a ton of money fly commercial, but obviously he will fly first class.
No, he was awesome, man. Honestly, he was really, really talking a little Dodger baseball with him. Now, switching over the pitching side, you got Yoshinobu Yamamoto on the mound today for the Dodgers. And the conversation with Yoshi, I guess, workload heading into this year. We saw him pitch really throughout the entire postseason, into the regular season behind that, going over 200 innings. Fabian, do they just trust his training methods and the communication that he has the organization to just pursue 25 to 30 starts? Or do you think there's going to be some workload consideration for Yama this season?
I think there's a lot of trust in the guy. There's a lot of trust in the training methods. There's a lot of trust in him knowing himself. And I think that doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to go wire to wire 30 starts, I'm sure like he'll be willing to sort of speak his mind about how he's feeling and stuff like that. But I think there's a lot of trust in the player just because of what he's been able to do his first two seasons, especially obviously that first year there was some handholding. I think even Dave Roberts kind of made like there was some handholding with Yamamoto just because you didn't really fully know him yet. You understand that's a 12-year record investment in the guy. I think after seeing 2024, last year you saw a lot of just trusting him, unleashing him in a way. I think what they saw after game 6 and 7 of the World Series, I think they know that this guy knows what he needs to do to get ready, what he needs to do to stay ready. There's a lot of trust in Osamu Yada, aka Yada Sensei, just to sort of know what Yamamoto can sort of handle. And he's training for this. He's training to be able to go wire to wire, to be able to go whenever, despite the obvious concerns about his frame, about his size. He's been able to push those aside for long enough that knowing how what his body's capable of, I think there's a lot of trust there. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him sort of put up 30 starts like he did last year.
And it's tough to find someone, something to improve upon for him, but 4 2/3 innings, what he averaged in the playoffs, 5 innings in the regular season. As far as efficiency goes, Jerry, what are you looking for Yamamoto early in the year?
Well, I think, you know, part of that reason, especially in the regular season where he averaged those innings, I think it was because kind of you wanted to save his arm and make sure that he was fresh for the second half of the season and obviously in the postseason. So I expect those numbers to go up as far as eating up more innings in the regular season. But I agree with Fabian. I think there will be a point where you may skip him a start or two in the regular season to make sure that he continues to stay fresh. Now, I will say this. With him and his sensei, the way they grind, the way they work, they're probably the most prepared for of any person I've seen at the big league level, knowing and understanding their body, knowing and understanding what needs to function and what needs to fire to make sure his 5'10 frame is able to really deliver a pitch around 95 to close to 100 miles an hour. So nobody's been more prepared that I've seen than Yamamoto. And you see Mookie Betts training with his sensei to make sure that he could perform at this highest potential at shortstop defensively and then with the bat. So I expect Mookie Betts to have a bounce back year offensively as well. So get back to Yamamoto, man. This guy is prepared. He knows his body. So I expect those innings to go up slightly as far as every single game, giving us maybe six and a third throughout the course of the season. And he's going to be ready to fire in all cylinders come postseason. So I expect another big year because we talk about guys being hungry. Fabian, I'm sure you can attest to this. And Doug, you're around the guys as well. Talking to the coaching staff and talking to some of the players, I think these guys are more hungrier knowing they have a chance to do something that hasn't been done in 25 years, man. They know last year that, you know, they didn't hit well in the postseason. They certainly didn't hit well in the World Series, and they were able to find ways to be able to be World Series champs. They understand they can't go out like that again. They got to make sure that they hit better and perform better to be able to three-peat. So these guys are hungry. And it really, it starts at the top, and Yamamoto is one of those guys that leads his staff. And I think that he's going to have an epic year. He's trying to get a Cy Young award, his first at the big league level. So I expect him to have a huge year.
Yeah, I think we look at the juxtaposition of Yamamoto and Roki Sasaki, and you see Yamamoto. It's just the pursuit of perfection. Just watching him throw in the WBC before the game, just communicating every single pitch. He just knows exactly where he is and as far as how in tune he is, how dialed in he is. And I think that, as Fabian pointed out, I mean, this is a guy that knows what it takes to reach peak performance for himself. So you just say, hey, like, unless there's something as far as a big drop off, then we'll communicate. But he's already one of the best pitchers on the planet. As far as the big X factors out of the rotation, I know we've talked a lot about Roki Sasaki and the ups and downs of Roki. And since we had our last show, he had another outing, didn't go so well. Fabian, I think the big question is, did he earn the spot on the rotation? Was he given the spot on the rotation? Did River Ryan deserve the spot over him? I mean, looking at Roki Sasaki right now, is the hope just, hey, the bright lights of the regular season are starting. We have an evaluation process. I saw Andrew Friedman told Bill Plunkett that that last mile of development is best served at the big league level. Do you believe that to be the case for Roki Sasaki and why they're continuing to go with it, even though he's had some struggles?
Yeah, that's what the Dodgers are hoping for. I think they're hoping that the last little bit of development can happen at the big league level. And I think there's part of it where they just don't think that he's going to be served by pitching in AAA games. Like, they don't think that the competition level is there. Like, obviously, it's one of those things that's kind of well known about the game at this point, is there's never been a bigger gap between AAA and the big leagues. And I think understanding that, like, yeah, rookies suck. You can easily go down to AAA and dominate guys by just throwing a splitter a ton, and guys can't hit it. But there's still something to, he has to nail down the fastball command more than anything. He has to be able to nail down pitching, just sequencing things right, especially when it comes to that third pitch. And there's so much of it that just has to happen at the big league level. And also the Dodgers are in the position where they can afford to have him struggle in the big leagues. They had that same thing last year where he struggled and they still won the World Series. I wouldn't classify him as an X factor for this rotation, because he's not. Like, the Dodgers can survive with him struggling, and understand that their hopes for 2026 aren't tied to Roki Sasaki's success. But if their hopes are to keep expanding this window out, yes, yeah, Sasaki's going to have to be part of it. So I think trusting him in that situation to sort of figure it out, or I don't even know if it's trusting him. It's just throwing him to the deep end and telling him, hey, learn how to swim. And I think that's kind of what they're doing at this point with him in the rotation.
Yeah, and you heard Dave Roberts mention it, getting him into compete mode. And yes, you look at the spring training stats. He's thrown more balls than strikes. Half the batters that he faced reached, 9 hits, 15 walks, 2 hit by a pitch in 8 2/3 innings. But Jerry, it does feel like he needs to just clear his mind and get into that compete mode. And I think being a big league game, knowing it counts, that's kind of when you dig the deepest. And it feels like, hey, it's at least worth giving that a shot to at least have a full evaluation of where he is right now against big league hitters in a regular season game.
Absolutely. And to kind of touch on what Fabian was saying, which he's extremely accurate, and, you know, talking to scouts as well and other ball clubs, it is a huge gap now between AAA and the big leagues. So it wouldn't really serve him well if he does go down to AAA and let's say he dominates, because now AAA is made up of a lot of young guys. Back 15, 20, 30 years ago, AAA, we had guys 4 or 5 years, 6 years with big league experience, still trying to hang on and playing AAA baseball. And it was elite level of baseball when you had guys that had experience, knew how to work counts as a hitter, or on the flip side as a pitcher, knew how to actually pitch because they've had a lot of big league experience. So it wouldn't serve Roki that well to go down to AAA. I will say this. You're right, Doug. When you are at the big league level and the bright lights are on, and we saw him excel in the playoffs last year and really save us. He did save us. We didn't have a closer. He went out and became our closer, and he saved us. We don't win the World Series without Roki Sasaki. So hopefully he takes some of that energy once he sees Dodger Stadium, and now we know this counts, and he excels and does his thing and has great outings. Now, if he does stumble, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 starts, they're going to probably take a look at, in my opinion, my humble opinion, looking at him as a hitter is delivery. I think he has more of a closer's delivery. He's got that high leg kick coming from a stop. Now, if you look at Shohei Ohtani, you look at a guy like Yamamoto, maybe a guy like Pedro Martinez, David Cohn back in the day, they had that windup and it was smooth and they would have a leg kick. Maybe he experiments with that where he doesn't have to work so hard. I think every pitch is a grind because he's coming from a dead stop and he has that huge high leg kick a la D-Train. Now, D-Train had that high leg kick, but if you go back when he was really successful and he was an elite pitcher back in the day, he had that long windup and then he brought that leg kick up. Doc Gooden back in the day, he had that long windup, and then he brought that leg kick up. It wasn't really from a dead stop. So maybe that is the last phase of his development. Figure out a way to have a windup to go along with that leg kick so he doesn't have to work so hard. But again, like I said earlier, maybe it is pitching at the big level. He needs the bright lights, and he is able to find his delivery here in his first few starts in the regular season.
Yeah, there's certainly moving parts in those mechanics. I look at the NPB numbers, though, in the velocity in the NPB when those mechanics were similarly in line and the velocity was consistently 98 to 102 in that range. Fabian, it looked like there was a pretty significant dip in velocity in his last outing. What do you make of that?
I think there's also something to, like, that was a long first inning and it's sort of building off from that. Like the first inning, the velocity was up and then I think the velocity was down as things went down. So I wasn't sure there's maybe something to fatigue after that first inning that took something out of him, or maybe taking something off just trying to find some sort of semblance of fastball command. But yeah, it's one of those things that I think the velocity is going to be really important for Urokisaki, but at the end of the day, if he's not throwing strikes, like that, that's the biggest issue above all.
It feels like he just needs that coming out party at the big league level. And if he has that and then it just snowballs and all of a sudden everything is positive momentum for Roki. And that is the hope. As far as how this rotation lines up to start the year, yeah, Yoshi on the bump today, going to be at Zach Gallen. Emmett Sheehan is going Friday, then Tyler Glass now on Saturday. You got the day off on Sunday. We'll see Roki on Monday and Shohei Ohtani on Tuesday. The first part of the season, you get the off day on Sunday, and then you get the three-game series against the Guardians, three straight Thursdays off. So the way this rotation lines up, I think the Justin Robleski kind of tipping all this is really interesting. Fabian, do you see him kind of being used as that sixth starter, a swingman maybe after they get through this first portion of the season? Just kind of what's the outlook for Robo to start the year?
Yeah, he's going to be that sixth starter once they need a sixth starter, which is going to be for a little while. But until then, he's going to be sort of that swingman type guy. We saw him come in after Ohtani in that last freeway series game and look dominant. I think that he's also a guy who is, in a way, insurance for Roki Sasaki. If he has another outing where he has to get pulled out from an inning early, he's a guy who can help bridge some innings when you really need him to. So that's one of the luxuries the Dodgers have with Ohtani's roster spot, where they can essentially carry an extra pitcher. And Robleski is essentially serving as insurance for if a guy can't go long early on in the season, especially a guy like Roki Sasaki.
Yeah, and in their first 18 games, they would only have to use a pitcher on 4 days rest twice. You got Emmett Sheehan and some younger pitchers in there. When you look at kind of the X factor for this rotation outside of maybe a Roki Sasaki, what he could be, I feel like Glass now didn't really get talked about a lot during spring training. I think that's a really, really good thing, because let's not forget, this is a guy that is your opening day starter for most teams around the league. Feels like Jerry, that Glass now is just found a really good place for the mechanics, and he added some strength, and it just feels like he's in a really, really, really solid place to start the year.
Yeah, I think he's an incredible spot. I think this is the best I've seen him look since he's put on that Dodger uniform. I love the fact he added weight, good weight, about 10, 12 pounds. He knows he's stronger, and he feels more confident in his delivery. And anytime a player is confident with his stuff, he usually has an incredible season. So I think he is that X factor, because he's got incredible stuff. But we're going to need guys, especially now that Blake Snell is out. Hopefully he comes back in about 6 weeks or so. But we need guys to make sure they eat up innings, because we saw last year, guys, our bullpen didn't have the best of seasons. And I, part of that was, you know, obviously they had so much stressful innings in the years prior, especially in the playoffs of 2024. And I think I kind of carried over, but they were asked to eat up so many innings early on. I think at one point they were leading baseball in innings pitched in the first half. That can't happen, guys. That can't happen. So we need guys like Sheehan. We need guys like Tyler Glasnow. In my opinion, both those guys are the X factor to not only pitch well, but to give us innings and hopefully give us six, possibly seven strong innings to make sure our bullpen is not taxed. So, yes, Glasnow, I think, is poised for a big year. I really believe his confidence has soared, especially the way he pitched in the postseason last year. And him coming out and pitching in game six out of the bullpen, who helped us big time and helped us win that game to have a seventh game. So Glasnow is certainly one of the X factors in that rotation.
Yeah, and Bobby, and last year, the talk early on the season was Glasnow kind of adjusting those mechanics, trying to take less pressure off the elbow. Have you seen a difference year to year in those mechanics?
I haven't noticed that much of a like specific difference in the mechanics or watching him to the naked eye. I've noticed a difference in how he's talked about the mechanics and the fact that he's not necessarily worrying about them as much anymore, which I think Dodgers people are the happiest about. Like they are glad that he's not thinking about his delivery out there. He's just thinking about competing. And that's sort of one of those things that his first couple of years with the Dodgers, they can repeatedly stress as much as possible. Like, hey, this is a guy who just has some of the best stuff in the world. he needs to worry less about like what his delivery looks like and more just going out there and competing with what he has, because that's plenty good enough. And we've seen that the spring where he's not really worrying as much about that. And all of a sudden the delivery and mechanics and everything looks great. The stuff looks great. And Dave Roberts said this is the best they've ever seen him. And I think part of it is because he's less in his head about pitch to pitch, making sure my arm is doing this, my leg kick's doing this, my timing is this. It's more just like, hey, here's what I have, go hit it. And that's what he's done really well. And I think that's going to serve him well over the course of the season. And I think it's one of those things where if you're not thinking about every single little thing, maybe you're not feeling your elbow as much or your shoulder as much. And maybe he's able to have more of a durability than he's had in the years past.
Yeah, the beautiful thing is for Glass now, I mean, they don't need him to be their ace or their number two starter if everyone stays healthy. So it's a really a comfortable role for him, not to put too much pressure on him. I think the guy that I look at as not necessarily the X factor, just because you don't know how many starts he's going to get. But as far as a guy where his ceiling and his upside, if they do lose any of these guys for an extended period of time at the front of the rotation, is River Ryan. I mean, River Ryan, as far as the stuff, the way it's played, the way he's looked since he's gotten back, the confidence that he has on the mound, the way he looked a couple years ago in those four starts. I mean, the upside is certainly there. Fabi, what do you think the plan is for River Ryan? Is it just, hey, he's right there as one of the first guys to get one of those spot starts if there is an injury and he's coming off the Tommy John surgery? But how high do you think they are on River Ryan, and what do you think his role could be this season?
I think they're super high on him. I think they just know that the fact that he's coming off surgery, they want to make sure they protect him, especially because this is a guy who hasn't thrown that much professional baseball even before he got hurt. So I think that's the biggest thing. But yeah, I think if there is an injury early on in the season, they're more than willing to throw him out there. I think they just wanted to start him in the minor leagues because it's more of a controlled environment. They control his innings a lot easier. You're not worrying about wins and losses as much as you are about just keeping River Ryan in a good place for when the Dodgers do eventually need him, because injuries are going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you got to bake in some of those injuries and just the fact that if their top line starters are 80%, they're going to want to have someone else throw those innings because they want to be ready for October. Jerry, when you look at River Ryan, what really stands out?
I love the makeup. I love that he's an athlete. You know, he was drafted as a shortstop. He's a tremendous athlete. He doesn't have a whole lot of miles on that shoulder and that arm. I know he does. Did have Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago, but I love that he's got that compete on the mound. He reminds me a lot of Tim Hudson. I faced Tim Hudson years ago when he was with Oakland with the Braves as well. He's got that mentality. He's got that type of stuff. So I love the fact that he's starting the year out in AAA, because you remember coming off of Tommy John, he did not pitch last season. So I want to make sure that, and the Dodgers too, want to make sure that he has some innings under his belt, find the rhythm, find his flow in AAA. And if something happens at the big league level, he has that experience in AAA, and he knows that I don't have to worry about certain mechanics or my delivery. I just need to go out there and pitch and compete. And I think that's one thing that I think is something that I've always admired him, seeing him coming up through the minor leagues and then pitching right away at the big league level. He's a guy that doesn't really overthink a whole lot of things. This is my stuff. I'm going to see if he can hit it. And more times than not, I know it's a small sample size, he was extremely successful. I really thought he would have been a difference maker in our rotation if he doesn't get hit a couple years ago. He was trending in that direction. So I think the Dodgers know exactly what they have in River Ryan. They just want to make sure that they don't rush the process. They want to make sure he's completely healthy. Everything is out of his mind as far as not worrying about his delivery, his mechanics. He goes out there and competes. And when he's ready, I have a feeling he'll be up at the big leagues sooner rather than later.
Yeah, there's definitely a moxie to him. You mentioned the athleticism. You're going to like this. He told me he can windmill dunk, and he said he'd get close to dunking from the free throw line. I was like, I need to see that. I mean, we saw Emmett Sheehan make a half-court shot. That's on video, right? So we need to see that windmill dunk from River Ryan. But let's get into the fun stuff, gentlemen. The over-unders for this season. Okay, we're going to bounce through this quick hitter style. Some thoughts on the big show. We haven't talked Shohei Ohtani yet. And the first over under, I think this is the most interesting one. We can talk home runs, but over under 23.5 starts for Shohei Ohtani. Fabian, I'll start with you.
I'll go over. I think he's obviously only gone over this mark one time in his career, but it's clear the Dodgers and him want him to sort of go wire to wire this season if possible. It doesn't mean they're not going to skip a start here and there, but I think Ohtani wants to log as many innings as possible, so I'll go over.
Jerry.
I'm going to go over. I think he makes possibly 25 starts this season.
I'm going over too. I mean, I think we saw his last start, 11 strikeouts. I mean, he looks like a man on a mission. The most starts he's made in this season is 28. If he does go over, I mean, this could be the defining Shohei Ohtani season if he's able to do the next question, and that is hit 50 or more home runs. Fabio, you got over under 50 bombs for Shohei.
I'll do slight under. He's gone over 50, obviously, the last two seasons and set the Dodgers single season mark both of those times. But I'll say under because he's logging more innings.
Jerry.
I'm going to go over. I'm not doubting this guy. This dude, you know, he saw Acuna Jr. in the WBC leadoff, his side, the Venezuelan side, home run. He goes, I'm going to go to the first inning. I'm going to lead off our side with a home run. This guy loves the challenge. I think he hits 51 home runs.
51 home runs. So he had 55 last year. He had 54 in 24. I'm going 60 for fun. I'm going 60 for fun. And it'll be the season for the ages. So give me a 60 bomb season for Shohei. Okay. Next one. The newest all-star Dodger to the lineup, Kyle Tucker. A 30-30 season. By the way, we talk about a guy who had a 50-50, right? Yeah, 30-30. How impressive is that? I mean, still very, very impressive. And I think it's a real testament to the speed and how dynamic of a player he is. Over under 30-30, Fabian, for Kyle Tucker.
I say sure. Why not? He was one home run away from it in 2023, his last full season. And that was his last season with Houston Astros. I think he's in a position to do that this year. Obviously, understanding, like Jerry kind of talked about, he's going to see a lot of fastballs this year. And also, the Dodgers aren't going to be afraid necessarily to run in front of a Mookie Betts or a Freddie Freeman. If anything, some action on the bases in front of those bats and ball guys is even more of a benefit.
I'm going to agree. I think he does go 30-30. I think he's going to take advantage of Dodger Stadium. You got to remember, it was cold there in Chicago. And it's a tough place to play at Wrigley Field April, early May when it's really, really cold. And then late in the season when it's really cold. And remember, he was banged up as well. So I think he's going to love the friendly confines, if I will, at Dodger Stadium because the weather is going to be perfect. It's going to be 75, 80 degrees. He's going to love hitting our lineup. Definitely 30-30 for Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, I think just infusing the lineup with a all-star under 30, a guy who you know is going to want to play 150-plus games, and he's got the talent to do it. I got to say over, too. I mean, I think that and plus a run out of Gold Glove. I think it's going to be a monster year for Kyle Tucker. I think he's going to be the Dodgers' second most productive hitter in this season. Now, Freddie Freeman, another guy who could certainly be that, is has made it very clear, Fabian. He likes the three to start his batting average, and he doesn't like the fact that it wasn't a three last season. Does he get back to being that 300-plus hitter this year?
I think he hits 300 on the dot. I think he does. Okay. He came really close last year. Like he was 295 last year, and that was what he felt was kind of a down year swing-wise, especially second half of the season. The first half of the season, especially May, he was like red hot, in line possibly for batting championship. So I think having a full season healthy from that ankle is going to help him. I think he hits 300.
All right, Jerry, for your life, Fab Five Freddy, what do you got?
Fab Five Freddy is going to hit 313 this season. I think because he's going to be hit fourth and fifth this season, I think he's going to have less at bats, you know, let's say against left-handed pitching. I think because of that, he's going to walk a little more. 313 this year for Freddy.
And we know that he already made it clear, Fabian. He told us in Camelback, right, that he wants to continue his career with the Dodgers past where his contract is with a couple years left. And I think it's very obvious he wants 3,000 hits. So he's got 2,431 hits, and we know he wants to get to 3K, so a 300 batting average gets that. And by the way, can we just say that I kind of appreciate in this age of analytics, which I'm very into, that a guy wants to hit 300, that he like appreciates a 300 batting average. Of course, batting average isn't what it used to be, but I appreciate the fact that he likes that plateau.
I've never heard of a guy hitting 300 or 310 or 330 have a bad season at the plate. I've never heard of it. You know, guy usually hits 330. Guess what? He had an incredible offensive season. So yes, it's still cool to hit for high average.
Yeah, what does Joe Davis say is the most miserable 300 hitter in baseball? I think that tells you a lot about the standard that he has set for himself. Now, Mookie Betts, I really love this one. I love this one, Fabian, because it's kind of right in between kind of a slumping bets, a kind of a peak MVP bets. Of course, 2018 bets was on a whole other level, but over under a 120 OPS plus season for bets.
I'm going to say like slight under, but it's going to be a bounce back from what last season was. I do. I think last year was, he had a fight even just to get to, I think it was a 105 or something that he finished last year at. I think this year's going to be a lot smoother start to finish, a lot more of a typical Mookie Betts season, even if it's a little bit lower than maybe his career norms.
How about you, well, Jerry?
I'm gonna go over. I think now that he's working with Sensei, he's got his weight back. He's stronger. He made sure that he kind of monitored his weights, not just in the offseason, but also in the spring training. They slow played him. I think he's going to be a lot fresher. I think it's going to be slightly over.
Yeah, that 2021 season had a 126 OPS plus. So it's not like every season it's been 135 or more. I'm going to go slightly over two. And I think that you emphasize the strong shortstop play, and Doc Tad kind of really is the best part of his value that he provides for the next couple of years for this team. Okay, next one, Edwin Diaz. By the way, Fabian, what was it like to hear the first Timmy Trumpets at the stadium? Not as electric as it's going to be, hopefully, tonight, but just a little appetizer, right?
I wasn't there the other day, but I'm sure it will be, especially once they get that new ribbon board installed in the next week or two.
Yeah, it's going to be hype in there. Over under 34.5 saves for Edwin Diaz.
I'm going to go over, just because there's gonna be a lot of games where the Dodgers have the lead in the ninth inning and they have a guy who they know they'll trust in that sort of spot. So I'm gonna go over.
How are you, Jerry?
I got over too. I think he has 40 plus saves this season,
and he has been under every year except he only had 57 in 2018. I'm gonna go over too. I'm gonna over too because that's gonna be the role he's gonna have on this team. I think they want to have that push button closer, so we'll go over there. Over under 5.5 all-star selections for the Dodgers. They've had at least 5 every year since 2018. Fabian?
I'm going to go over. I mean, it's hard to really list all possibilities because of how talented the Dodgers are. So I, especially if the Dodgers have the first half that they probably will, I would go over.
I go over as well. It's just too talented of a roster.
Yeah, I mean, the locks would be, yeah, Shohei is a lock. Freddie, if he's doing what he's doing, I think Mookie wants to be an all-star again. I think the question for me is, who are the guys that haven't been all-stars, and do they make a run at it? I mean, does Andy Páez make the all-star team? I think
Will Smith will be an all-star.
America's fourth all-star team. But, yeah, I think 5.5, they're going over. I really think it's not possible, but if you want an all-star ratings bonanza, if you had the Dodgers versus the rest of the league, like, obviously that's not possible. You wouldn't waste their pitching, but that'd be great for TV. Can we agree on that, or?
Yeah, we good.
Cool. All right, so let's switch it up here. Let's go to over under a top five finish for Yamamoto in the Cy Young. Fabian?
I'm going to go over. I mean, he finished third last year. I think the goal is for him, if he has a full-fledged healthy season, he's one of the best pitchers in the National League, if not all of baseball. So, yeah, he should be in that mix at the very least if he's able to get through the season healthy.
Jerry? I think he's top two. I think it's him and Paul Skenes. That kid in Pittsburgh is special, man. But I think it's top two.
Yeah, I think it's tough to talk yourself into someone winning over Paul Skenes if he's healthy. But Yoshinobu Yamamoto getting top three and Shohei being top three, I think, would say a lot about the state of this staff as this year progresses. And we talked about Andy Páez, by the way, over under top three finish in the Gold Glove in center field. Fabian?
I'm going to say no, not because of his glove, but just because of how many good glove first guys there are in center. But sort of like to Jerry's point earlier on the season, like the fact that he became as good of a defensive center fielder as he has is a huge testament to him and the work that he's done, because he was a guy who very clearly was not a natural center fielder when he first moved over there. There's some office hurdles to get over, balls over his head, some communication stuff. He's nailed all that down. That his range plus his arm make him a plus center fielder out there.
Jerry?
I don't think he's going to be top three, but I think in production-wise, I think he's inching closer. Like Fabian just talked about, there's a lot of elite defensive center fielders in the National League. But I think he will be around top five, at least in that conversation this year. And then I think the following year, now that his reputation is really starting to to take place, and he takes another step. I think 2027 will be the year that he'll be top three, but there's a lot of great defensive center fielders out there.
Yeah, if he's top five defensively and above average bat, that's a win for the Dodgers development. I'm hoping that, hey, just the narrative for him, people remember that catch he made in the World Series. I was talking to Dino Abel in Miami, the WBC, and they said that, hey, they worked on his first step with him, and that's improved a lot. And if we see those highlight throws from him because he has a cannon, like, that's kind of what you want to see. But yeah, I agree. It's about kind of being the complete player. I'm really interested to get Fabian's thoughts on this and yours, Jerry. Teoscar Hernandez, over under a three war season in 2026.
I'm going to say no, but not because of the bat. I think defensively, like, there's still obviously some concerns in left field. He's not going to be able to be as high on the defensive spectrum in left field compared to right field. But I think offensively, he's going to have a bounce back year. Defensively, there's still some question marks that have him just under a three war season.
I don't know how war is calculated, man. There's so many different types of war calculations. I will say this. This will be his best offensive season as a Dodger. I just think he looks so good at the plate. Obviously, his body is as good a shape it's ever been. I think he has his best offensive season this year.
That's saying a lot. I mean, he all could silver slugger a couple of years ago, and we saw the production, 32 doubles, 33 home runs. If he tops that, they're gonna be really happy about that production. Okay, before we get out of here, World Series predictions. Do you guys want to throw out a team? I know we did WBC. We'll throw a start with you, Jerry. Do you want to do your matchup for the Dodgers in the World Series?
Well, I think I have the Dodgers beating the New York Yankees. That's right. The New York Yankees, they're going to figure out a way to get back to the World Series. I think they're better suited this season. So it's going to be Dodgers in six over the New York Yankees.
MVP?
Oh, the Big Show. Big Show is going to be MVP.
Bobby, do you want to throw out a World Series prediction?
I think Jerry had the exact same stuff I had for Dodgers over Yankees. I had Ohtani to win a National League MVP. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I submitted to The Athletic already before this episode. It's not one of those things where I was copying Jerry, but that's where I have it.
Okay.
Everybody, hey, read that article. Read that Athletic article.
Rob Manfred would love that again. You could definitely you have as many Yankees Dodgers World Series as possible. I'm going Dodgers over Astros. And I know that the Astros aren't the team that they were, but you got Carlos Correa back. You still have some of the cast of characters. I think, look, we're talking about box office. We're talking about must-see TV. The storylines would certainly write themselves. The Astros would have some work to do, but I got Dodgers over the Astros in five games. And I know everyone wants a home series win at Dodger Stadium. Have had a World Series win since 1963 at Dodger Stadium. I want to win at that park, and for reasons you guys already know. Before I actually get out of here, though, over under 100 wins, and you guys want to throw out a win total for the Dodgers. Jerry?
I got the Dodgers winning 103 games, so it's over.
Fabian?
I've got under, just because they're not going to push it. I think it's one of those things where, like, they're going to load manage guys, understand that, like, hey, as long as they win the division, especially this year, they can secure the bye. I think they know they're going to be in a good spot. So I'd say under, but I don't think it's going to be that much under.
As long as they have 11 wins in the postseason, that's the most important.
It's all about 11 wins in the postseason. It's all about 11 wins in the postseason. I will say this, though. If they do get off to this really great start and there's pressure on them with the pace to go for 117 or beyond, that could be a pretty interesting storyline, to say the least. Bobby, do you think that they just locked into 98 wins and 93 wins, knowing that we don't need to eclipse 100 to win a World Series? It's not like they're going to actively try to tank or lose games. It would be interesting to follow that ride.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to push it, honestly. I especially knowing that, like, they've had long seasons the last couple of years. It's a veteran group. I think they know that the October is going to be the higher priority there. And I think they, while temptation probably will be there, I don't think they'll push it, even if they feel like they're close.
And I will say this. I was going to say around 98 to 99 wins. I just think they're going to have a little bit of a hot streak where their offense carries them to that four or five extra wins. I will say this. If you really look at Major League Baseball right now, there is so much parity. There are so many good teams out there. And I think right now, healthy, as far as the league-wise, there's so many great players and a lot of really, really good teams. So I think the parity is going to be there as well.
Yeah, you got the balance schedule, you got the parity, you got the Dodgers being every other team's World Series, as Mookie Betts likes to say, so that's a factor as well. But I do think that this team stays healthy, they are going to eclipse the 100 win mark, but it's not going to be the gaudy number. I got 105 wins, which a couple years back you would say, wow, a franchise record, but still, I think got 105. We got all the Dodgers winning the World Series, so hey, breaking news, a Dodgers show picks the Dodgers to win the World Series. But guys, enjoy opening day, baseball's back, cannot be happier. And yeah, if you guys haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to the Dodgers Collective. We're going to be breaking out Dodger baseball all season long. Myself, Fabian Ardaia, and Jerry Harrison Jr. So leave a like, drop a comment, and subscribe. And until next time, go Dodgers. All right, fellas, let's end this.